Okay, thank you. Now, you heard earlier on the case for capitalism and the profit system with a bit of monetary reform done to it. I'm going to argue the case now for the exact opposite of that, the case for communism in its original sense. Now, many of you here will have seen the exchange of videos between Stefan Molyneux and Peter Joseph. Now, Stefan Molyneux is a supporter of, he's a mad marketeer, he's a supporter of free market capitalism. And he repeatedly, in his contribution, accuses Zeitgeist of standing for communism and even for standing for Marxism. Now, in his reply, which is I think is quite good, Peter Joseph studiously avoids these jibes. As I say, I think he does so, it was quite an intelligent move on his part, because in America, the word communism, what they call communism, is a really dirty word. You may have heard the story about the demonstration of Cuban exiles outside the Cuban mission to the United Nations in New York. It sort of gets out of hand, and the police start charging in and beating up people. And one of the demonstrators says to the policeman, "Why are you beating us up? We are anti-communists." And the policeman replied, "I don't care what sort of communist you are," and continues hitting them. Now, that's why, because in America, the word communism is associated with what went on in Russia. It's associated with state control. It's associated with a one-party dictatorship. It's associated with gulags and all that sort of thing. And, of course, if you ask anybody in Zeitgeist, or are you a communist? They say, no, of course not a communist. And it's an unfair criticism that was made by Stefan Molyneux to accuse Zeitgeist of standing for communism. But I want to suggest another response to the sort of criticism that Stefan Molyneux was making, and that is to say, yes, Zeitgeist is communist or communistic in a sense, but in the same sense in which Russia never was communist and wasn't communist at all. And I'm going to take as the text for this talk something from the original Zeitgeist activist orientation guide. There's a footnote, there's a passage which says, communism is complete state control, and the footnote says this, if I can read it in this light. Communism is being referenced here in its historically applied form, not the idealized forms which advocate no money. I'll repeat that again, not the idealized forms which advocate no money. Now, up until the time of the Russian Revolution in 1917, that is what the word communism was associated with. It was associated with the idea of no money. It was associated with the idea of people living in a community, people living in a society in which they shared things, but they didn't use money. It wasn't Karl Marx that invented this idea. He was just joining something which already exists. And the idea of a communistic society with no money goes back a long way. I mean, in America in the 19th century, people established communistic colonies. According to the Bible, if you believe it, the early Christians also practiced a form of communism. And the anthropologists tell us that originally early humans also lived in a state of communism. So, I mean, that's what the word originally meant. Historically, all that changed with the coming of Russia. Now, I'll also say as well that it's not just this is how historically the word used to be used, but it's also logically what it means. Now, if you imagine a society or a community where the productive resources are owned in common, in other words, they belong to everybody, what this means is that, in fact, what is produced also belongs to everybody. So how can the question doesn't arise as to how to sell what's being produced to the members of the community, because they're already co-owners of it. But the question of having money as a means of exchange, as a means of buying and selling, just doesn't arise. What does arise in this type of society is how to share out what has been produced, how to distribute it. And the majority of people who historically called themselves communists, you know, before Russia came along, were in favour of distribution according to the principle, to each according to their needs. Now, let's come to the Zeitgeist project. It's called a resource-based economy. Now, of course, all economies are based on resources, so a resource-based economy must mean something more than that. And surely what it means is that calculations are going to be done in kind. They're going to be done directly in resources, not in terms of money. So anyway, here is the... I'm quoting now from... I think it's one of your leaflets issued by the Cardiff Zeitgeist. You know, what is a resource-based economy? Is the answer. It's a global system in which the planet's resources are declared the common heritage of all the world's people. It's a system in which all goods and services are available to everyone without the use of money, barter, or any other form of debt or servitude. I think that's a good definition. In fact, I agree with it. Okay, you call it resource-based economy. I would call it a world socialist economy, or rather, world socialism. Now, it's quite clear that on this definition, Russia was not a communist society. Russia was a society, for a start, it wasn't common ownership. The productive resources belonged to the state, and the state was controlled by an elite. They also had money, and, well, also had money, full stop. People worked for wages, they were paid money, and they had to buy things. So, you know, from that point of view, Russia wasn't communist. It was just like here, but because of the increased role of the state, I think the correct definition of what existed in Russia wasn't communism. What it was state capitalism. Now, if you say that the aim is a society in which all resources of the planet are the common heritage of all the people of the planet, you know, what does this mean? It must mean, surely, that no states, no corporations, no rich individuals, or for that matter, no poor individuals, have ownership rights over any of the planet's resources. It means that the planet's resources are simply there to be used in a scientific and a rational way to produce what people need. And once again, I mean, I can only quote from, you know, what the Zeitgeist movement itself says, if I can read it in this light. But I can't read in this light, so I won't. But I mean, you know, the Zeitgeist movement says that they aim at a worldwide system of society in which an abundance of goods can be produced so that you can eliminate poverty throughout the world. That there's no need for any human being in any part of the world to go without proper food, clothing, and shelter. It's just a question, in fact, of organizing it and arranging for, you know, this to be done. So what we're talking about is a society in which there is no money, because there is no need for money. We're talking about a society where, well, as far as consumer goods are concerned, people go into the common store and they take off the shelves, you know, what they need, and then they can walk out. They don't have to hand over any coloured pieces of paper, any round metallic objects, or put some plastic thing there, or a voucher, or anything. They have free, open access to what they need. And at the same time, all the utilities, electricity, gas, telephone, internet connection, and so on, all these are provided free of charge. Now, that is what the common heritage, all resources being, you know, the common heritage of all, implies and what it means. Now, as I said, from our point of view, from my point of view, a worldwide resource-based economy is, in fact, a world socialism, world communism. Now, I'm not going to suggest that Zeitgeist should change its name, or even that Zeitgeist should go around saying we stand for communism in its original sense. I mean, in fact, it's probably not a good idea to do that. Otherwise, you'll be in the same position as we are, which means that we have to spend a lot of time explaining what we don't stand for, what communism is not, before we can decide to explain what we do stand for, what we mean. So, but all I'm asking you is to recognise that in the original sense of the word communism, you know, recognise amongst yourselves that the Zeitgeist project is a communist or a communistic project. Now, okay, I don't know whether that's shocking or not, but if it is, you'll be relieved to know that, in fact, although the Zeitgeist Project might be described as communist or communistic. It can't be described as Marxist. Now, Marx, you know, he was a communist. He did stand for a society, a worldwide society, without money. But he had his own theories as to how to get there. You know, the class struggle, the winning of political control, which are things which Zeitgeist explicitly rejects, or at least doesn't endorse. So I think if Marx was around today, I think what he would say is that Zeitgeist is what in the Communist Manifesto of 1848 are called utopian communists or utopian socialists. So there were people who stood for communism or stood for socialism, but who weren't based like he thought they should be on the class struggle. It was an appeal to everybody of goodwill. Incidentally, I don't think that necessarily means that the word utopian has been used as a criticism. It's been used as the opposite of what Marx and Engels regard themselves as, of being scientific socialists. But there is something else, I think, where the Zeitgeist movement can learn from Marx, because I can read this passage now, because it actually ends up by saying that what Zeitgeist want is to replace capitalism by a society in which the limitations of the rule, no profit, no can do, are removed. So we're talking about, that's what capitalism is. It's a system where the basic economic law is no profit, no can do, or can't pay, can't have. Now, Marx analysed that system, and I think he gave a much better analysis of capitalism and what's wrong with it than the sort of theories that Zeitgeist based them on, which are similar to those put forward by Justin this morning, that the flaw in capitalism is a monetary flaw, is a flaw in the banking system and the monetary system. I think that implies, in fact, that capitalism is essentially a system of money lending. But capitalism is much more than that. Capitalism isn't, in fact, a system of money lending. What it is, it's a system of production for profit, which, you know, Justin didn't, in fact, object to. You know, why basing the case against the present system of no profit, no can do on these sort of banking theories is that the logical conclusion of this is that what is required is some sort of monetary reform. You know, if that's the flaw in the system, you get rid of that monetary reform, and you get rid of that by monetary reform, and you open the door for people like Justin to argue that monetary reform is some sort of transition towards the end of capitalism. I don't think it is. And in fact, well, I think I'm preaching to the converted here. But one of the leaflets that was handed out this morning and is on the table there, I think, puts this quite well. It says, even if reformed, the monetary system is incapable of becoming the tool to build the kind of egalitarian, emancipated society we need to thrive. This bit here is printed on blue, which is not a good idea. And it reads, anyway, the accepted motive of seeking competition at the expense of everybody else will survive even in a reformed monetary system. And it goes on, this flawed economic doctrine will be present even in a reformed monetary system. War and poverty are inevitable consequences of the monetary market system, economy of profit at all costs, whether it's reformed or not. And I mean, I agree with that. Now, the question which arises is the last big question that Peter Joseph put. How do we get from here, which is capitalism, you know, and this rule of no profit, no can do, towards what we want, which is a moneyless world of abundance? Well, I don't think this society could be introduced by dictatorship, and that's clear. But I don't think it could even be introduced by some sort of benevolent government or group of tech experts from above. It's only something that could come into being with a certain degree of support and consent and participation of people. And one of the examples which Peter Joseph gives is it must have been something like the civil rights movement in America in the 1960s and 1970s. I think he's on the right track here. This is what it's got to be. It's got to be some sort of mass democratic popular movement. I mean, that's the only way that a resource-based economy on a world scale can come into being. So, if you like, our task and your task as well, our task is, what can we do to make sure that this understanding of what is needed comes about as quickly as possible. Now, I know it's a widespread view in the Zeitgeist movement. This is going to come about as a result of the collapse of the economic system. Now, I'm not defending the economic system, but I don't think it's as near to collapse as that. And I certainly don't think this is something that we can bank on to produce this understanding. Capitalism is quite a resilient system. It has been through crisis like this, you know, three or four times in its history, and each time it has got out of it. And I would think that this system is not going to come to an end unless people decide consciously to bring it to an end. There's going to be no automatic collapse and then some sort of reaction against it. In fact, if I'm not sure even the conditions of economic crisis and economic collapse will automatically lead to people coming to the conclusion that we want them to. They could equally come to an opposite conclusion, and you could see the rise of authoritarian nationalism. Now, other people think that there could be some sort of transition, but it can come about, if you like, you know, gradually through various things which happen within the within the system. Now, I don't think this is possible. I think capitalism has got to be got rid of lock, stock and barrel in one go. And I see that I'm comforted in this view by the other side of that leaflet I've just read. It says, towards a 360-degree change in the design of our social system. Now, what is a change of 360 degrees? It's a revolution. Now, I can understand, once again, why in Zeitgeist you don't want to use the word revolution any more than you want to use the word communism. Because, you know, in popular mind, you know, revolution is associated with civil war, people being violent, people being killed in the streets, and all the stuff that Charles Dickens in the Tale of Two Cities, all that sort of thing. But in fact, that is not what revolution necessarily has to mean. It means what is said here, a complete change in the basis of society, which can come about peacefully if there's sufficient support for it. So, you know, I'm not afraid of the word revolution, but okay, you can call it if you like a 360-degree change. But I mean, you know, the thing is the same. It's a complete change in the basis of society, you know, brought about peacefully when a majority of people want it.
Again, I'm not saying evolution, but on the same point.
Well, I mean, if you like, revolution is evolution speeded up. But because, well, you know, man hasn't turned up from has he turned up, the man from free food? Or?
No, not yet.
Okay, well.
Wait, you
No. Anyway, because there is the problem of the meantime. You know, this system isn't going to come literally tomorrow, so we have to survive, you know, within the present system. I think most people seek an individual solution to this. They try to get the best job they can. They try to get promotion at work. They try to get the best education, you know, for their kids. You know, we in the socialists would see that the sort of thing you would do would be trade unions and organisations like that. They can provide a minimum protection, you know, within this system. People, you know, say maybe within your tradition, that I was asking about the man from Free Food, will think of things like that and, you know, let schemes, local currencies and so on and so forth. But, okay, all these things are ways of surviving within the system. It's an illusion to think that they are some sort of a transition to the new system. They're necessary, but they're only survival mechanisms, you know, within this system. I think that in a sense, the transition is taking place now. What the transition is, it's the change in people's ideas, and that change has already begun to start. And once you have sufficient critical mass, I think is the word that's used in P. Joseph's, once you have a critical mass in favour of the change, then the transition is over, and we're actually then establishing a money-free world of abundance, which you call a resource-based economy, and we call world socialism. Okay, thank you. You don't have a chairperson in your meetings?
I don't really need one anymore.
Well, it could be my own chairperson. Okay, who's got some questions?
Isn't it better to get away from words altogether, like the Zeitgeist movement, Venus Project, communism, socialism, and get down to reality, forget all these terms? So when I talk to people, I talk to them about what it means to live. pesticide and not the name of it.
Well, I think you've probably got a point, as I hinted at. I'm not suggesting that because you actually stand for what communism used to mean that you should call yourselves communists. But, you know, we're an organisation that's been going for over 100 years, and that's what our term is. And it's, you know, we're attached to the term for psychological reasons, if you like, even though it causes us all sorts of problems. Because if we say we stand for socialism, people think, that's Russia, or that's a Labour government, or that's Sweden, or that's equal sharing, or something. And we have to say, no, it isn't. So you're a newer and a younger movement. I'm not sure whether people do understand what Zeitgeist means, but you've got your term, you know, resource-based economy. You can explain it like that. I mean, we've all sorts. It's not important in the end, as you say, what this is called. It's what it is. I mean, I agree to you. I'm not going to convince you to change your mind. That's the.
I think it's really helping. What I've got to say so far is it's just been totally successful already, isn't it? Because I'm doing the same thing you say, there's some talk about it, and you come up and try and extract from Justin what you agree on, that's great. You're coming to us saying, look, we believe the same thing, we'll be doing different terms, and that's all well and good. Because I think the only difference between the two things, well, I'll come on to it now, and I agree, the titles don't really matter. The Zeitgeist movement, communism, whatever. There's just, I like the way you call it the Zeitgeist project, because it's a project. For goals that it's going to achieve or do away with the need for itself, so it's not something to be done through in a religious way. But I think, being real, the only issue that socialism and communism has had is it's got this boring image. And that's because it seems political. Whereas I guess it seems social, the film seems to hit a chord that's universal, and cool, you know, a lot of young people like it, because it seems to address it in a more, in a way that feels like it cares about your life, so to speak, you know? If I can expand a little bit, I'll speak a bit more, because what I was trying to say, I'll explain it to you. Can I just talk for a minute? I'll try and describe it through my terms, just so people can understand it, hopefully we can all be on the same page. Which is the core of it is what I said at the beginning. A good social system would be one where, if you design like a human body, you switch your hand, cut yourself, there'd be no conflicts going on with your body to decide what you need. It just does it. That's healthy. Create a healthy social system, you do the same sort of thing where you want to cooperate. With cooperation can't go wrong. So how much hard about cooperating fully? All we need to do is cooperate enough to sit there in each other's common needs. So we don't all need to be best friends with each other. And we need to educate each other on what really matters in life, is contributing to society. And that doesn't necessarily mean working. Having a job in itself means nothing. Like, for example, if you work in your shop, what you probably really like about it is the culture part of it, having good social interactions with people, but the actual work part of it, probably still feel boring at times. Yeah?
I can understand. I'm standing out here because there's lights going out. The word political, I can understand why you don't want to have anything to do with politics. Politics is another dirty word, isn't it? It's to do with careerists and governments imposing things on people. But I mean, this would be a disagreement between us and, you know, Zeitgeist. In fact, I think at a certain point in time, when you've got a majority of people, when you've reached this critical mass, which is, you know, we're nowhere near that point at the moment, political action will have to be taken. I mean, if an election comes along, are we going to let the Labour Party, the Lib Dems, the Tories, the Communists, the Nationalists, whatever they are, the Islamists, are we going to let them, you know, go to Parliament and control the state, which I think at that stage have to put up our own candidates standing for a money-free world of abundance. And in fact, interesting, when I arrived here just before 3 o'clock, there was about three or four of us outside the door, and they were talking about even putting up candidates now, to oppose these people, which would only be a publicity exercise, a publicity stunt, if you like, because you're not going to get many votes, but at least you would, you know, you'd be there, you know, putting the case for a money-free world of abundance. As a matter of fact, I mean, we in the World Socialist Movement are putting up a couple of candidates in the elections for the Greater London Assembly in May. But I mean, in our election manifesto, well, I've got some copies there. You know, we don't say vote for us; we're going to do this for you. We're going to say it's up to you. If you want to change the world, you've got to do it for yourselves. It's a do-it-yourself revolution. So, you know, we're only doing it for publicity things. So I think that, you know, at a certain moment, I mean, I can, at the present time, I can see why you steer clear both, not just of communism and revolution, but even of the word politics. But I think, how can you conceive the change taking place if at some point the majority of people don't organise to take the power of government out of the elite and the minority that control it now?
Well, I don't think it's... I'm not scared of the word politics. Like Ryan is a point in time, but traditional party politics.
Yes, that's right. Yes, conventional party.
There's a difference...
Yes, come on, buddy.
There's a difference between party politics and politics, right? This is a political leader. There's no getting away from it. We are discussing. And when you're discussing, right, in social intercourse with another person, right, it's a political statement that you're making. You can't get out of that, right? But when you talk about party politics, right, and especially capitalist party politics, what you're talking about is control. We're not about control here. Right? There's nothing about control. We're about thinking. What's possible, right? At the moment, we're told that it's impossible, right? And we are looking at the possible. We're going to turn over what is thought as impossible and make it possible. That's the difference, right? And we can only do that politically, at the end of the day. Now, let me explain. And let me just take you back a little bit further, about 5 minutes ago. There was a bit of a dispute between the two of you in regards to the words revolution and evolution. Right? Now what we're talking about here is social evolution. Now, when you study social evolution, you are basically looking at three elements that brings about the social evolution and that's a change from one society to another. You've got the economic element, you've got the social element, and you've got the political element. Now, you're looking at a process there. Right? This is a process. Now, in the past, what's occurred, and if you look at capitalism, what you'll see, what comes first, is the economic element. In other words, the economic examples, what our friend Keith here was trying to put across.
Keith?
And not, is it Keith?
Justin, sorry,
trying to put across. And not succeeding, I've got to be honest, right? But capitalism brought into being economic examples. It made money a universal equivalent, which it wasn't previously. Money was being used, but it wasn't a universal equivalent for all commodities. Right? Now that's very important to grasp. Right? It also brought into being banks. Right? It also strengthened the state in regards to regulation on competition, etc. Right? Now, you add that part of evolution at first with capitalism. And then you add the social element where people were turning around and saying, yeah, I don't want to be a peasant anymore. Right? No, I want to be a wage slave. I'm moving into the cities, right? I'm becoming wage slaves. Right? So there's the social element. And then the political element is when the capitalist class themselves turned around and said, right, oh, we've got so far, now we've got to go for the full. We've got to take over control of the state machinery. And that's what you need in order to become a ruling class. And the capitalist class are a ruling class. Right? Now, you also need to remember, now it's very important that you remember this. When you talk about the next stage in social evolution, the past processes may not well stand. Because this is a brand new experiment in regards to the human experience. What we are talking about is consciousness. That's it. Bottom line is consciousness. Your values, your attitudes, your knowledge, and how you understand what makes the world tick. Now that's a great leap forward. It's going to be a great leap forward for the human race as a whole. And once you've got that, once you've got that critical mass, the whole process may well change. It may not go as the past processes which I explained, the economic, the social, and then the political. Yes. It may well go, we just don't know, it may well go social, which the Zeitgeist movement is now stepping on, tenderly, right? it then may go economically, which Jason is also Jason is also stepping on 10 million as well, right? But then again, it may go political straight off, which the World Socialist Movement is stepping on tenderly as well, right? We just don't know. What we do know is this, and that is, it needs to be done, and the sooner it's done, the better for all of us. Thank you.
Adam went on the first part of his book a lot about how the World Socialist Movement is stuck with this terminology of communism and socialism, and the historical and psychological reasons can't get rid of it. And that's probably a handicap which the Zeitgeist movement hasn't got. And that may be true, but the acceptance of terminology or otherwise changes. And a prime example of it is a word we've pronounced since I've been in this room for the last hour and a half, probably a dozen or more times, but that's the word capitalism. Ever since, 1907, but I mean 2007, the word capitalism has become popular. When I first started to sort of think about matters politically, if you use the word capitalism, you were a bit nutcase. There's something a bit wrong with you, and really, you should go away and knock off, because people were not going to listen. I remember the Journal of the World Socialist Party, the Social Standard, say 20 years ago, if it had on the cover the word capitalism, it didn't sell. People thought there was something amiss. Nowadays, the best way to sell a journal is to have on the cover the word capitalism. Everyone's using it. The David Cameron is saying he thinks capitalism has got its faults, but it's all right. 10 years ago, a Prime Minister would never have used that word. And nobody in their right mind would if they wanted to be listened to. So the point I'm making is that, the acceptance of terminology does change. It's true that nowadays, because of association with Russia and China and so on, words like capitalism and socialism they don't work, frankly. People sort of turn away if they see them. And that's a bit of a problem for the people who use them. However, this is not necessarily terminal. It's not necessarily permanent. It can change. Hopefully it will. And if it does, perhaps organisations like the Zeitgeist won't be too afraid to use them, and will see that there are very some close connections between what they're advocating and what the World Socialist Movement is advocating.